Hawks fans, again, never really recognized my cue. You might be hearing me mid-sentence as this podcast begins, but welcome. Thank you for being here. We're happy to have you, Darren Black and I. It is Sox Pop on the Farm. It is number 45, I believe. I'm titling it, Do the White Sox Know What They're Doing? And this would be the minors edition because Sox Pop on the Farm. We're on the farm. We're not on the south side. We're not in the ballpark. If we were in the ballpark, you could hear us echoing right now. White Sox. But listen, we got the news today, Darren, what we feared. And, you know, a guy that, you know, I don't make too much of this, but, I think you see a lot of the positive of. The guy stood up in Davis Martin last year, came out of AA and acquitted himself rather well in the major league level. He seemed to be the guy who was very clearly the number six, I guess you'd say, starter on the depth chart, was pitching well at Charlotte, and then had gotten hurt. And then we heard forearm soreness, and now we hear it's Tommy John surgery. That has triggered me as the host who don't know nothing to sort of open up this podcast, and rather than go through our MVPs of the week or whatever, we can catch up with that maybe next week, you know, double it up again. We've done it before. Hopefully nobody's going to feel too sad that we're not talking about their MVP for performance from this past week. Apologies to the four of you. DJ Gladney, it's perpetual now. We're just Xeroxing at this point. Get all the awards. Well, we're going to just send them all at the same time. But to take maybe a step back, talk the way we have a little bit in the past, Darren, that is a little more broadly and generally about the system, because the lack of a Davis Martin, as if Davis Martin should be in any competitive team, the only or maybe even the number six. I know we've gone back and forth a little bit on this, Darren. I seem to think that there should be much more starter depth, and you look back at me and say, well, dude, how many guys are you going to get who are major league ready, who are going to be happy to pitch in Charlotte and be like the number eight starter? And I do understand that. It's not a matter of snapping fingers and Rick Hahn can just call up 12 Johnny Cuetos and be fortified and have a better rotation in June than he has in April. But that said, Davis Martin being out reveals weakness and depth issues, it seems to me, and this is the discussion we're going to have. At this point now, Sean Burke is maybe six. Christian Mania is maybe number six. Nobody is. Jesse Schultens is number six. Nobody is number six. Tanner Banks pitching four outs is number six. We don't have there's not really the depth to go beyond six, which is sort of nuts. So that is the premise. We won't necessarily dive right into Davis Martin, even though that's the premise I've laid out. What I'd like to know first, and this is probably a twist you weren't expecting, Darren, but I would like to know, given that you've studied this system and this team closely, certainly for five plus seasons with Southside Sox, but certainly part of the reason why whenever I assaulted you the first time and said, hey, Darren, do a bunch of minor stuff, please. You had actually, I'm assuming you had more than casual interest in it at that point. So given a track record with this system and seeing, I'm not sure about ups, but definitely downs of it, I'd like to start out and ask you what you think the White Sox are doing better or doing right with their development system in the minors. Is there something that they're either doing really well or at least they're doing better that you're seeing? We're going to start positive because we love the White Sox and we do not want to criticize them, and there will be criticism in this podcast, but I want to start maybe on a note of something, if there is anything that you've noticed that's better or even good. White Sox, you listening?
if I were to say anything is good or maybe a little bit better than what they normally do, it's probably those kind of middle, or not even middle tier, but late tier. Like maybe they didn't get a really low bonus when they were drafted, or maybe they didn't get the couple thousand bucks that the international players get sent. If they're really interested in somebody, it's kind of those Danny Mendix, Matt Foster's, just to kind of name a few of recent, those type of guys who are not going to be world beaters, But they are just whatever they've done in the minors, they have excelled at everything possible, and they have gotten the most out of them. The probably the two most famous examples might be Yolmer Sanchez and Leury García, based off of what they were when they got them. And those are guys that were obviously very limited and were never going to be, you know, all-stars. I kind of, if you want to throw in Jose Quintana in there, but I guess that would be kind of a whole different story because yeah, that's like a regime and a half ago.
Yeah.
However you want to term, you know, the same guy being the president or vice president throughout the whole entire process. But probably that. It's they're able to get the most out of these athletically limited guys. And then if they are too athletic, they seem to fall flat on their face whenever they get those type of guys. But lately, I would probably, and we haven't really seen any of this in the majors yet, because Mike Shirley took over for the 2020 draft, and I do think the 2020 draft and on has been better. This 2022 draft looks really, really good so far, even though their best player is or their first round draft pick still isn't pitching yet, and the 2021 first round draft pick still isn't playing yet.
Well, you know,
but yeah, it's to be determined on this amateur scouting director and see how that goes. They haven't changed international scouting directors in, I mean, maybe even my life whenever they got in trouble that one time.
Right.
Like every major league team does. But what they've done lately is kind of the same thing with just with the pitching staff only. You look at Christian Mena, who looks pretty good. You look at Cole Cimas, an undrafted free agent that they seem to be getting a lot out of right now. Mm-hmm. And then the younger guys, they have seemed to miss on pretty much any high school pick they've taken, besides Colson Montgomery. So hopefully things go better for Noah Schultz, but there's, I mean, I wouldn't say they're good at anything, but if you're looking at something to hang your hat on, they seem to get the most out of the guys that don't, that shouldn't be there. And it might be better in the future based off of the last couple drafts.
Yeah. And could be worse. Okay. Now listen, something you said, I got to mine into it now. You're citing the Danny Mendix of the world for helping them find a gear that got them to the major leagues and not just flushing out, you know, a Daniel Palka type of career where it maybe make an impact for a year plus, and then maybe you're never heard from again, but you did make that impact.
Yeah.
All right. The White Sox are good at sort of helping those guys find that gear, which I would argue they might have already had in them. Danny Mendick gets drafted at 20 odd something, whatever. And he's like, oh, I'm going to show them. And, you know, he's just got that in him. So what does it say about a system and the instructors when you've got the talented players that are maybe more likely to underachieve, as I think you pointed out, and maybe some guys who are, I mean, I don't even know if this is just a statistical, just what you would expect, the number of guys you would expect to overachieve. But okay, let's say that they're good at what you said, getting the Mendix to the majors. That's not exactly an endorsement of the system either. I mean, you're supposed to take those top five, say, round picks and sort of assure that they get to the majors. And it's great if you have the gravy of a Danny Mendick making it and being gritty and grindy and all that. You know, I mean, that's awesome too, of course. But, I mean, it's even in your positive, what you struggled to find positive, what they're doing well, it's sort of, it is almost a backhanded compliment that the guys they're able to matriculate are sort of, you know, I hate to say it, but like mediocre or average talents, let's say. And the guys who seem equipped, maybe they don't have the ability to reach those guys. I mean, that's not great. That's not what you want to see as an observer and as an analyst of the system of, geez, this guy's getting flat. You know, West Cath is flat. This guy's flatlining. And okay, well, Danny Mendick is, you know, Romy Gonzalez is striving his way to the major leagues. Great stories, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't drafted a star since Tim Anderson. It I mean, this year is really weird with Jake Berger now looking like the guy he was supposed to be when he was drafted, like three Achilles ago. But other than that, it's really just kind of been, and I know there's, you know, Andrew Vaughn, we don't know yet. And in all reality, Jake Berger, we don't know yet. And Garrett Crochet, we don't know yet. But it's just kind of not, they make it to the majors. Their first round picks make it to the majors, which two thumbs up for that, I guess. But I think drafting and knowing who's good is much better now than it was 20, 30 years ago, or 10 years ago when they were taken, like Courtney Hawkins or Jared Mitchell's, like guys like that, that clearly just weren't, you know, ball players. I'm not sure what they can do to kind of fix that, because they pretty much were doing the same thing when they caught lightning in a bottle with Tim Anderson that they had been doing with the two guys that I just mentioned. He just worked a lot harder at it and was just a much better hitter. Maybe not defensive guy, but just much better baseball player than those other two guys. And then they did the 180. They went with, we've known quantities of, we know these bats are going to be great. We know Jake Berger's bat's going to be great. We know Zach Collins' bat is going to be great. Oh, Zach Birdie, he throws 100 miles an hour. He's going to be great. And then so on and so forth, because it was pretty much the same kind of system after that. Because Andrew Vaughn, oh, great bat. He'll be great. Garrett Crochet, oh, he throws 100 miles an hour. He'll be great. And then
Nick Madrigal just has a spidey sense to play the game. So, of course, we're going to pick him after.
Great bat on ball. He'll be great. And now Cubs fans can see that he, you know, is not anything of consequence, though the Sox didn't win that deal either. definitely not. But another guy who has, like, in that deal, Cody Hoyer, another guy that was like, oh, there's some tools there. They found something in that. We've seen a lot of guys that they traded this year. McKinley Moore, make it to the pros, stuff like that. But I'm not too sure how they fix it. I'm hoping this past couple drafts is what is kind of going to be the turn of it, because we talked about this last week where, you know, the A balls are doing really, really well. And some of that is just older guys like Tim Elko doing really well.
Right.
Or this week's Bryce Willetts, another kind of older college prospect. But you see DJ Gladney taking strides forward. Yeah. Jordan Sprinkle was probably the best hitter they took. He looks fine. Probably a better hitter than he probably should be at this point. And then all the pitching, it just looks fantastic. And they put a lot into pitching this time around. Even guys like Drew McDaniel and Shane Murphy, Tyler Schweitzer, not really the top tier guys that you're really thinking of, doing pretty well. So I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm not sure how long this regime will watch over that success. I think we all expect it to be in perpetuity, but they do kind of go through amateur scouting directors a bit more than they do the rest of the front office.
Which is to say they don't change anything at all, right? Again, I'll read between the lines on what you just said there. And it seems to me now, granted, with the caveat that you've already noted that in the Shirley era, let's say, things could really be changing. So again, we have to pause on that, because, you know, these guys are very young, right? But from what you're saying, say like under Hahn, over this last decade, is it a safe observation that when the playing field is equal, the White Sox fare very poorly? When we're talking about grabbing the free agent who maybe didn't get drafted, when we're talking about clearly Cuba, I mean, we can't overlook that, even though, you know, it's not technically the farm system or the draft. But when the playing field isn't quite right, and when the White Sox can sort of exploit advantages, or just, I mean, maybe be smarter, outwork, out scout, that they do that. Is that a fair observation that if we're just going to look at it through the prism of the draft, again, excepting maybe these last couple, the White Sox don't fare terribly well. And where they're getting some of their value comes from these places. The Cody Hoyers just sort of waltzing in at, you know, whatever round pick. I obviously wasn't super high pick. I don't think. I hope I'm not wrong. Cuba, the Cole Seamuses of the world. It sounds like a little bit of what you're saying. Is there a fair interpretation of where you're at?
No, yeah. I mean, they don't give themselves a huge margin of error. Now, the margin of error of every single one of these draft picks and every single international signing of late, because they're not like Jose Abreu and doesn't exist. They're not getting those type of guys any longer. They're going to Japan nowadays. And they're never going to compete with Shohei to get Shohei Ohtani. And that is a level playing field to an extent. Mm-hmm. But I think kind of they go back to Carlos Rodon. They didn't give him a qualifying offer, which at worst he stays at. I guess at worst or best doesn't really fit there. But
yeah, the options were there and they took neither.
If someone else signs them and you get extra whatever pick it is, an extra couple million dollars, and that's another maybe high school draft pick, something like that. They don't leave a lot of room for that. Like even in this past draft, Peyton Schultz or Noah Schultz. I got Peyton Pallett
and Noah Schultz combined. Might as well. We haven't seen Noah Schultz. Yeah. He may not exist.
Yeah, but they took those guys. Noah Schultz, a high school guy, not as highly rated as a high school guy as some of the guys that got bigger money, but more question mark there. So he'll take a lower bonus. Mm-hmm. Peyton Pallett is coming off an entire year of not pitching because he had Tommy John surgery the previous year. He went down a lot in bonus pool from what he was expected. That's kind of what they have been doing lately, or just in this past draft, and trying to see or piece together potential. And then later on, they'll go like, oh, okay, Shane Murphy was pretty good. We'll throw a bone to Tim Elko. We'll see if he can actually be anything. And they'll take more known quantities later on. Definitely not as high a potential, but smaller margin. And they do the same thing in the international pool too. And you would usually want your international money to be spent supplementing where you weren't able to draft, which this year would have been bats. And they did sign some interesting guys like Eric Hernandez, but he's 17, super young and raw. I guess saying 17 and young and raw is a little redundant, but that's basically what he was. And then you have Wade-El Chiarelli, who has also signed in that same year for less, but older, more known quantity. And now he's in Winston-Salem already, doing really well, mind you. But that's kind of how their business has always been, and that will not change when until the big guy up top leaves on that end. But they've always worked on smaller margins. That's why everyone always says for the 05 title they caught lightning in a bottle, because they actually did have a lot of prospects that came either in trade or draft that actually all hit kind of at the same time. Mm-hmm. And they were hoping to do the same thing this time. They all drafted and traded for guys that were supposed to be up 2018 to 2019 to 2020 at the same time, and then all leaving right now. And they have one playoff win to show for that.
Yeah.
And that, again, that's also kind of harbored some of their drafting during those years too. The pandemic kind of makes it a little weird. Like Andrew Vaughn missed a whole entire year of baseball, and Garrett Crochet just recently pitched in the minors for the first time. So a little bit, pandemic weirdness.
Yeah.
But those are still two really advanced guys that shot up the system, and maybe weren't better for it. Maybe they didn't develop enough for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, both are playing positions we didn't really think they were going to play when they were drafted as a reliever and I guess, and Vaughn is now at first base, but
finally,
yeah, but as a left fielder for a few years. But it does seem like they're doing it smarter in 21 and 22. Still, all those high school draft picks are not looking that fantastic still. Jared Kelly looks not that great. And Westcalf, like you said, doesn't look that great. So we'll see how kind of Mike Shirley's crew ends up. But I am more heartened now than I was by all the guys that literally crashed and burned in the Nick Hostetler era of just constant injuries and nothing looking back. And Davis Martin being the last Nick Hostetler era draft pick getting hurt.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back, talk more about this system. I've already learned a lot. I'm sure I'm going to learn more in the second half. If you stick around, wait a minute or so, listen to a couple ads from Fans First Sport Network, I bet you're going to learn something too. So hang with us. We'll all learn. See you in a minute. White Sox fans, Brett Ballantini. I am lucky enough to be hosting Sox Pop on the Farm. They tell me it's 45. So it's 45. 45 of these farm podcasts. And it's not to say we've never pulled back the lens, because I know we have, pulled back the lens on the system and not like drilled down and talk for 12 minutes about DJ Gladney before. But given the injury, if you missed the news of to Davis Martin, Tommy John surgery, our number six starter, our certainly number one minors depth starter, and arguably only minors depth starter, is now going to be out well into 2024, it would seem. And of course, it just reveals, it reveals a barren system. Now, Darren in the first half was smart enough to sort of remind me, hey, listen, there is a new regime. There is maybe a theme to it or a style to it that's a little bit more distinct than, say, the Nick Hostetler era of drafting and pursuing amateur players or just punting international money because why not? Why would you want more players? Again, that with the caveat that, you know, we're still, you know, for the intents and purposes of a minor league system, this is new. This is practically just almost still brand new because we're just talking about a couple drafts and there are some promising signs. There are some signs that might give you pause. But we started off in the first half, in addition to somehow invariably talking about things that aren't going too well for the White Sox, did want to start off with, hey, what is going well? And Darren did actually answer. The answer wasn't convincing because there isn't a convincing answer. Let's be honest. He did good. I can see him doing very well on essays or oral exams under pressure. But let's now delve into what the White Sox have done, or maybe still are, because I guess we're sort of breaking this now into a couple different, I guess, eras. We still got guys in the system that are coming and we're drafting under sort of a different hierarchy. And now we've got the Shirley hierarchy. But what have the White Sox done? Some things I suppose are obvious, but what stands out to like the weaknesses of how the White Sox, and let's say in this rebuild era, so we'll go back, 5 years or so, and what they're still maybe not getting about the draft or the international or whatever is the process. What stands out to you that's like, why do they keep doing this?
The biggest thing is they were clearly, we'll just take from the amateur drafts perspective, is they were clearly drafting to fill holes. Like Zach Collins, a catcher does scream first round pick, but we knew he wasn't good defensively. So that's confusing why they did
sort
that.
Sort of not a catcher, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And then off the bat of that going Jake Berger, or I guess they had two that first year, just first round specifically. And then Zach Birdie in the comp one. I think drafting relievers is great. We've talked about many relievers in our Southside Sox tenure, but I think a lot of them are much later. We've talked the guys that we were kind of excited about, Ian Hamilton's, Tyler Johnson's, Caleb Freeman, who's still here. They were much later than Zach Birdie. Guys like that that throw 100 miles an hour kind of get hurt. And then Jake Berger, they didn't think they had a third baseman at the time. So they were like, oh, third baseman, we'll click that one. And then the next year or that same draft in the second round, like, oh, Abreu's getting older. First baseman, click that guy. Like all those guys were known as good hitters, but not, you know, they went too far from the, you know, 100% athlete, you'll learn to play baseball, to, oh, you're a good hitter, you'll learn to do the other things. And right. they, I mean, Jake Berger is a really good hitter right now, but he did not learn the other things, which is why everyone's like, oh, well, where do you put him? Mm-hmm. That's a problem for a first round pick to wonder where to put them.
Yeah.
And I guess that would kind of go through for a little bit because they did just draft Andrew Vaughn in 19. But in the past few years, they've just been going so hard into pitching. It is kind of hard to kind of gleam what they're thinking about hitting wise. But even then, they still did it with Nick Madrigal. They're like, oh, we just traded away a second baseman. Pick him. With the third overall pick, they picked him.
he's sweet.
That's just what they've done for a while. And the past couple of years, I think they have gone in the kind of have-y part of it, because Colson Montgomery is a shortstop right now, and everyone just assumes because he's so tall, he'll gain weight. He's 20 right now, 2021, that he'll be at third base. It's not a situation where you're like, oh, it doesn't really look like a shortstop. You actually think he could be a shortstop, but just because of how you want him to grow into being a major league baseball player, hopefully he'll need to probably move to third, and he'll be good at third. And if you kind of look at how they've been playing it with Lenin Sosa and Jose Rodriguez and Brian Ramos, Ramos was signed more or was signed later than those guys. But actually being able to play at the positions that they're at, that's kind of been their calling card of late, I think. Again, we'll see how it goes, because in this 2022 draft, they took maybe like four position players, and there's probably just two that you could see moving up to a AAA major league level. Barely, and that's Jordan Sprinkle and probably Brooks Baldwin, but they're so far away. Right. And I think that's what's more interesting about this next draft is that they'll go hard into the bats, I think, just because of how many pitchers they took lately. So I guess if you're not looking for much else in the season, you can look forward to a lot of bats taken for the Arizona Complex League. If you're really interested in that.
And if you are, let us know, because we need the coverage. We need the photographs. We need you there.
Yes, we do.
If you're listening.
But yeah, I think there's a lot to be said going forward now that they're in a new rebuild phase or whatever, tear down, whatever we want to call whatever they're doing right now. But they seem to be over going with guys that they think will fill holes on the major league team and are just taking guys that they think might be good later on. So I hope that stays, and I hope they keep taking high schoolers in the first two rounds as the bonus pool allows it. But I do think there's been a change in the last couple of years. We just won't click. Colson Montgomery's hurt and we'll be in high A. We won't see that for a minimum like August 2024.
Yeah. What? Now, you're describing to me a draft strategy that lasted, let's just say, through the Madrigal Vaughn picks. So that's pretty much almost nearly to the present day. That almost sounds like fantasy baseball drafting. And as much as it's maybe changed, as you pointed out, it changed from the very distinctive Ken Williams, Jared Mitchell. He sort of speaks to me. He played football. I think this guy's going to figure out. And then, you know, how that didn't work. And that could have been more dragged down by injury or anything else. But then on the flip side, Tim Anderson, very similar profile. Hey, is he a basketball player or a baseball player? And, you know, worked hard enough to make his way to the majors and become a star, for sure. You know, of course, that's more lightning in the bottle. And we all know that. I mean, we're not really trying to hang the White Sox up for things you can't necessarily control. So much of this is a coin flip, be it injury, be it, you know, international players, you don't know how they're going to respond to coming over to a different country. I mean, there's just so many variables, which makes this fascinating. I assume that's why Darren Black, a young Darren Black, a six-year-old Darren Black, started studying the minors when he was just barely out of the crib. But
the Schaumburg Flyers,
the theme has changed maybe from a more like strong arm Ken Williams, just take this guy, he's a great athlete, we're going to make him a ball player. Well, we're seeing a twist on it, I guess, up until recently. But this twist is, okay, now we're drafting for position, drafting for the slot that we need at the major league level, even though these guys aren't going to sniff the majors for, I mean, the White Sox move guys up fast and it's still not going to be like, well, I guess they've done it a couple times where it's this year. But I mean, that obviously that you're not drafting for that. So, I mean, it is almost like a fantasy baseball thing. There's a whole war room of people. There's Rick Hahn in the mix. Jerry's got to sign off. I'm sure even the communications people might throw a word or two out. Certainly all the scouts, everybody who's in, you know, there's dozens of people involved in this, situation. And yet the White Sox went from, okay, the Jared Mitchells, that type of like theme, to then the Zach Collins, which is sort of a variation on that theme. How have the White Sox ended up being this major market club that sort of has done this, you know, I hate to say it, they've done this so poorly. We've seen these variations on a theme, but it is still sort of the same theme of just like, let's just knee-jerk it and almost not having the intuition that you maybe need to pick guys. Again, this is crystal ball stuff and I get it. I wouldn't want to be in that position. So any criticism here is with the caveat of, hey, that's a hot seat, no doubt about it. But boy, you know, sure there's Chris Sale, sure there's Tim Anderson, and that's great, thank God, because otherwise they might not have a team any longer if a few of those guys don't hit. But they've had a lot of opportunity for hits that really haven't come about. Even though they've sort of changed, they've sort of flipped the philosophy, it's still a variation on the same thing of just like, well, this is the computer said, this is the guy we should pick, and it matches. You know, our algorithm says, hey, we don't have third baseman, so Jake Berger. That's unnerving. I mean, again, we might be in a new era where that's changing, but you got to look back at the Hahn era and say, wow, they've, what an interesting set of draft picks, and wow, not great. Nothing to feel too proud about.
Yeah, I mean, I got the gist of it, that they just traded for all this talent that was in high A, double A, triple A, and they would all be on the team in 17, 18. And so you want to draft, you know, the 2016, 2017, 2018, you know, college guys that seem more ready than the others. And that's exactly what they did. They just took the wrong guys, pretty much. When you're wanting to do a first round draft pick, like Colson Montgomery was like such a breath of fresh air from what they had been doing. A guy that we've already talked about, the shortstop, probably going to be a third baseman, but you knew that he could go around the infield and be more than okay. You knew that he was coming with a clear like structure at the plate of great plate discipline. He'll walk. The strikeouts might be a little high right now, but he puts good wood on it when he gets the bat on the ball. That was kind of the opposite for especially Zach Collins, who was striking out a lot. Jake Berger, not as much so, but you were wondering where he was going to end up being when he was drafted. And it's just, looking back on it now, it looks just really, really confusing. And I enjoy the Shirley past couple drafts where it doesn't seem like that's what he's doing. Now that, again, that's a lot of pitching, and maybe it's good to just take a lot of pitching, because we see right now they need a lot of pitching.
They do need. Yeah.
But I think overall, if their seats were really hot, and I'm not sure who gets final say on the budget for an amateur scouting department or an international scouting department, or what type of, you know, things you can buy that, or like what analytical department you have and things that you can bring into that. I don't know if that's Ken Williams, Rick Hahn, Jerry Reinsdorf, who is saying like, yes or no, we need this. But it clearly was a no somewhere. And they didn't get enough. resources in that department. So that's why they've always kind of been behind. And every White Sox fan knows that their front office is behind. But just in league circles, from what they've said, what I've read on like The Athletic or listened to them on the radio, it's been, oh, the Sox are just behind everybody else. And they're lucky they're in the Central because everyone else is behind. Because even the Royals, with their World Series title, lucked into kind of remaking baseball in 2014, right. 2015 sure. with their Super Bullpen. Yeah. But I, again, feel a bit better about this latest amateur draft. If you want to branch it out to the international scouting pool, they're by far and away the team with the most bonus left. So they have not improved there. But I think that's kind of just pretty much the state of things. I don't know if things will ever change on that end. Because even Nick Hostetler is still in the front office. I don't know what he does, but he's still there. He's a special assistant to somebody or another. I'm not remembering who, but yeah, it's just...
there's a really big room at the park. There's a really big room. It might just be bullpen style of where they just corral all the special assistants. This team has a lot, given that they have like, or they haven't in the past, whatever, had like no analytics department or whatever. And, you know, as you pointed out, okay, they're behind. They are not behind when it comes to special assistants. They might be at the forefront. If this is a trend that's going to remake baseball, they're going to have some, you know, Severinsen can't be the hitting coach anymore. Well, now he's a special assistant to Ken Williams. Why not? Hey, he's a good dude. Sure. He should give him a desk, you know, whatever. Sorry, you got to wear a tie.
Ron Kittle's the special assistant to the art department.
Like, yeah, Ron. Ron Kittle is another issue entirely. Okay. A couple more topics I want to hit, and I don't know if this is one that is going to force you to wax on for 10 minutes or maybe it's a shoulder shrug. We've heard, it just makes me blanch. I'm sorry. No offense, Chris, but we've heard that a potential GM in the making, or someone who is perhaps going to could potentially take on a more significant role with the White Sox, is Chris Getz. Chris Getz has been sort of running the show in player development. Now it seems like, I want to say, it's been a chunk of 5 years-ish. I don't know. I would say it certainly overlaps rebuild time to now, whatever this time is. I guess it is rebuild. Hey, we're back. Full circle. turntables have turned. So, okay. What's your assessment of Chris Getz? I mean, I know obviously Mike Shirley's now the guy who's, you know, presumably the point person in terms of punching that button. It's not a fantasy draft for the draft, but, you know, certainly overseen by and development under the hand of and the guidance of Chris Getz, the guy who it does seem to be very hands-on, doesn't talk to us bloggers in a conference call anymore like he did the first couple of years I was here at Southside Sox, but still a guy who seems hands-on, talks to the media, et cetera. He's the point guy, I guess, for the minor league system. What's your vibe? I mean, we've sort of covered the fact that it wasn't so good. Now it's getting a little better. Maybe Chris Getz gets credit for attracting a Mike Shirley or recognizing Mike Shirley as a guy who maybe should be making the calls or the guy they can point the finger at when things don't work out well. But just your vibe there, given that he doesn't seem to be getting run out of the organization. If anything, he seems like his status is getting further exalted.
Yeah, well, I mean, who does get run out of the organization?
Good point. Moot.
Their power structure is so weird. But generally, if you're an assistant to something in this organization, then you have five different bosses, and you're not sure who the actual boss is. But it does seem like because of he was the player development guy for the Royals previously, that he is basically the player development guy for the White Sox, even though I think he is, his position is actually assistant GM. Mm-hmm. So if you are wanting Rickon fired, that's the guy that'll take his job, or Ken Williams' son. I think it's 50-50, to be honest, if Rickon does get fired. He's tied at the hip to Han, so if you think Han's done a bad job, then I would say Chris Getz has done a poor job as well. Okay. Uh, I there's if you look at their roster, which and his thing is player development, their 40-man roster, that there's quite a few guys that aren't actually under his purview. They were developed at other places, like largely other places, like Giolito, Reynaldo Lopez, or even guys from his before he was even there, like Tim Anderson, guys like that. And then not even going to bring up the multitude of kind of veterans that they have that no one's tied to. So I don't think he is anything special. If someone in that front office was really smart or was ahead of the game or anything like that, then I think a lot of things wouldn't have happened in the past couple of years. Like he should have said, to bring it back to Rodon, like it might be smart to give him a qualifying offer. If no one else in the room was saying that, then that's an issue.
Pass him a note that says, are you seriously not doing this? You know, I mean, just pass him the note. Slide it under the door if the door's shut. I mean,
And I think we all understand the constraints that Jerry Reinsdorf puts on all these guys. Like handing them a manager that they don't want. I don't know who they would have hired. It seemed like it's AJ Hinch, and Hinchy isn't doing a fantastic job in Detroit. If weird, you lose all your good players that were cheating and you're bad.
Nice.
But I guess he has Miguel Cabrera, so he has to deal with that. But I mean, so I don't really think Getsy is a real kind of, I would be mad if Han retires, resigns,
fired.
And then it's Chris Getz is the guy next to him. Cause that to me probably says that Ken Williams is back at kind of making the decisions again. If that is the case. So I don't know. It's easier to say when people have a direct, like title, like Mike Shirley, like director of amateur scouting, I can directly know what you're doing. Chris Getz, assistant general to whatever, general manager to whatever. I don't know what you're, he talks about a lot about the minors. He's interviewed a lot about the minors. Is his best idea Project Birmingham? I don't know if that's, you know, something to hang your hat on.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about word processing. You can just strike that from the resume at any time, you know, and maybe nobody will attach that to you, or hiring people in your system will end up getting in legal trouble. White Sox. Okay. I want to point out, I got to go, you know, don't rewind 7 minutes to listen, but I'll point out that when Darren said, if you think Rick Hahn's done a bad job, that means Chris Getz has done a bad job. That was a rhetorical question. We all know, we all are familiar with the fact that Rick Hahn has done a bad job, and it's very hard to find out what they've done, what he has, his regime has done a good job of. And I'm sorry, Rick, we all want you to succeed. We all like you as a guy, or certainly liked you as a guy coming in. And now things just seem to be getting awfully overwhelming. And now, you know, to your point, Darren, you've got Chris Getz, who is paid to sit next to Rick in, well, not literally, this is a joke, but to sit next to him in meetings. And in case Rick is nodding off, nudge and say, qualifying offer time. Are we really not going to do this? Are we not going to take the free number 40 pick and the free money that goes with that, an extra star prospect for our system, just because we're being nice, or that we don't want to spend $18 million on a guy who's going to go off and have a 5-war season again? Okay. A vindication for Han. Now he's hurt with the Yankees. Good Lord. Okay. Darren, give me something. And maybe it's already come up. Give me something. Here's a challenge. And I definitely couldn't answer this question. Or maybe I could. I'm pretty uppity. But what would you do differently? What would be one thing that you would do? I mean, granted, yes, your initial response was supposed to be laughter. But I mean, something specifically that you'd like to see the White Sox do going forward, say under the Shirley regime, or maybe in this rebuild, what did they just, you know, what's the big whiff here? What did they really miss on that seems very obvious and right under the nose? Maybe it's a single move. Maybe it's a philosophy. Just something that jumps out to you. Like, again, why are they doing this? Why are they not doing this?
Yeah, to narrow it down to one.
Yeah, page through the notebook quickly. All right, I'll let you. I'll give you a minute.
Yeah, but I think if I'm just gonna, I'll say this under the assumption the front office is the same and the same. There's the same owner, so I'm not gonna say fire everybody. If it's the same owner, that won't happen. I'm not gonna say, hire more people to be in your analytical department, or just hire more people to be your player development staff, or, pay all of your minor leaguers, living wages at minimum, and provide housing, at minimum, or provide better food at minimum. I won't say any of those as realistic options.
Right.
Those newly unionized ball players that make living wages. I think the easiest thing they can do that isn't actually a lot of money is using their entire international bonus pool. And I don't care if it's, they're overpaying a few teenagers that they don't, they're like, oh, these guys kind of got some tools. You just have more guys. Anybody listening just wants to go and look at the Charlotte roster. Now they're doing much better than they were last year, mm-hmm. but it's mostly because they're signing other people's major league, triple A, quad A retreads. They're not relying on their retreads, mm-hmm. guys that they actually drafted, developed, and got up there. There are a few, but we just talked about the Davis Martin injury and who's the next sixth guy. That's probably Jesse Sultans right now, and there's not really anybody after that because they haven't done well drafting in from 20. I guess AAA would be 2019 through 2021. Probably they haven't gotten a lot of pitchers up there that way, and they're not using their entire international bonus pool. I think it's A-okay if you want to trade it away. I really, if you're trading that for another player, okay, like you're still getting another player. I don't get as mad about that, but just letting it go out into the ether, which they do every year, they have a lot right now, is organizational malfeasance. It yes. might not be the biggest thing that they can change that'll make the team better, but you'll have a younger crop, younger talent pool. In the DSL, the ACL, and low A, and then you can kind of weed them out as they go up the system to see who's real and who's not. If they had more of those guys, Tim Elgo would not be in low A right now, wasting away and wondering why he's there. Even if he's not anything, he's definitely better than a low A ball player. So that's probably the most realistic thing I would change tomorrow is use up that bonus pool right now on whatever.
It's like, I mean, I only bring this up again because we just were talking about Burlington Coat Factory in yesterday's podcast, Darren. And it's as if Rick Hahn is going to go buy a fur coat because he gets a percentage of the money that's left over. Like Michael Scott in The Office, he's going to get the $600 and he gets to spend it at Burlington. He gets that money somehow. Like Jerry pats him on the head, says, well, if you don't spend all the international money, because we don't want to give away any of that money to those teenagers who we may never see again, maybe they'll just take the money and never show up. They don't even have a glove. They don't own a glove. We've talked on this podcast about the fact that the White Sox don't field even as many teams as other organizations. You're not even saying do that. I mean, you could have a 50-player roster on DSL and decide not to have two teams. Okay, do that. But get more guys in your organization. I'm sorry if that means you're going to have to pay for more, like, bologna and cheese sandwiches, but come on. It is true. I mean, we use a word that you wouldn't think necessarily would come up when talking about Major League Baseball is malfeasance. And malfeasance has come up a lot. Rodon, we've referred to in this podcast. That is a great example. But just the notion. Right. Trading, it's one thing. It got us, I believe, Matt Foster, one of those arms. Maybe it was the other guy, right, who ended up yelling at the Sox on Facebook. I forget his name now. He's gone now. But okay, it's a guy who, and these guys that you're trading that money for will contribute to your system, presumably, and may even contribute to your major league team. Sure. So it's like you sign an international player. Okay. The idea that you're right, that you just let it expire is it's bewildering. If it rolled over, well, okay, weird, but all right. It's not gone. Now, White Sox at this point would have like $80 million in their coffers, but okay, if it rolled over, that'd be one thing too. Hey, we're not turned down by anybody who's still out there, or the guys we want are going to sign with us. Cool. It doesn't work that way though. So yeah, all right, that's a good call. I think we have the answer, Darren, but I'm going to ask you to say it again. And I have a feeling this has to do with just the very recent developments with the system and who's running it. But at this point, are you feeling optimistic or pessimistic about sort of the future of the system?
I feel better than last year and the year prior on their minor league system. Whatever year that last, it might have been Kopech because of injury. Whenever he graduated to rookie status, I think that's was the bottom, and there was no clear way to climb out of that. And I think it's better now. We talked about this a bit last week as well. The group of like the 20th to the 40th best prospects look better than they have in the past few years, even when they were probably really top heavy during the major rebuilding years. Some of those guys do look better. But in the end, all those guys are in low A and high A, and it's a long way to go. But I feel much better about Kanapolis and Winston-Salem, than I guess there were, than, I don't know, 2019, maybe there was no baseball in 2020. So yeah. I'll go with 2019.
And that certainly doesn't, I'm not taking your answer to mean that you're ensuring success, because, yeah, that is still big leap. But, yeah, the notion you can just feel a little bit better about what their direction is, what their philosophy per se, may be. It was a little strange. It's all arms. It will be interesting to see whether they do completely swing it over to all bats, or if they maybe just go like more normal and go, half and half. But it is intriguing, and it does seem like, there is, you're not being a Pollyanna and you're not being a Sox apologist to say, okay, yeah, I'm feeling a little bit better. You got to put a caveat because of who runs the show. Who knows who gets traded out, whose injury gets handled poorly.
There are a lot of them.
Yeah. Sorry. Sorry, Davis. And again, no aspersions there, but I mean, there've been a lot of things that haven't gone right after 20 years or whatever. I mean, even at the end of the Herm Schneider era, things were starting to change with the injuries, but I mean, they enjoyed such an amazing run. Maybe this is just the payback, but there's a lot of ways that things can still go wrong, no matter how you set it up. But Mike Shirley does seem to be doing his best. And it is noted that you are paying attention to what seems to be a little bit different. I don't know, different attitude, different approach, maybe even different results. I mean, different results is definitely what the White Sox need, because this hasn't been good. I mean, this has been the entirety of our time really working together, Darren, that it's just, wow. I mean, it's extraordinary. We've done now 45 minor league podcasts, because that is really, that's a recipe for pain. And I appreciate your fortitude to do them, because it's not always, fun to talk about. I mean, when Tim Elko is like the guy to talk about, hooray, we'll talk about him for 20 minutes. I mean, that's great, but there's always going to be a guy to talk about. Now, is that guy going to be major leagues or not? And Tim, we want you to be there. Stash alone, but your leadership is fine. We want to see you there. But all right, there, I guess this will wind up our philosophical, our pulling back the lens a bit on the farm. We're in the farmhouse. We're not in the fields or in the barn this time around. Usually we're there, we're getting dirty, we're mucking stalls and all that stuff. Today we just sat on the porch, got the corn cob pipe out, and just been puffing away, chatting a little bit about what's going on with the White Sox, and are they pointing in the right direction? Darren Black seems to indicate that it's a tentative, but I think it is a yes. Tentative. And I would not blame him for the tentative yes. But tentatively, we'll wind up now. Next week, Darren, I guess, unless some other stuff happens, some more pitchers are destroyed between now and a week from now, Darren, we'll go back to maybe wrapping up MVPs and hopefully have some exciting players to be talking about. I know some guys we're just getting to know. Some guys are names that have disappointed and they're starting to turn things around. Some guys just been, hopping to get. So we'll be rounding up all those guys, probably 2 weeks worth next week. But so again, test over, oral exam over. You can breathe easy next week. I promise I won't hit you with essay questions, and you can go back to actually wearing an affiliate hat instead of trying to represent the White Sox, which let's face it, it's a little painful. But thank you. Thank you for joining me. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hopefully, I learned something. I don't think you learned anything from me, but I think you learned something from Darren. That's cool. hopefully, this is worthwhile. Come on back in a week. We'll do a little bit more of the traditional pop on the farm, unless the White Sox force us not to. We'll see. Your move, White Sox. Darren, thanks. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll be back in a week or so.